Thank you so much for joining us for this week's message from Real Life Community, where we talk about connecting with God and others, growing in Christ-likeness, and sharing God's life with the world. My name is Sarah Comer, and I serve each week as Connections Pastor, making sure that you know that there is a God and a community that loves you and wants to go through the seasons of life with you. The easiest way to connect with us from right where you are is by downloading our free Real Life Community app from your App Store. You can also find us at reallifecommunity.org, and we would love to meet you on Facebook or Instagram. Until then, we hope this message meets you right where you are and helps you know just how deep the Father's love is for you.
So good to be with you guys this morning. I love the opportunity to sub in for Pastor Eric and just preach the Word of God to you guys. It's just such an honor and a blessing. And I'm just ready for it, you know? So, for some reason, it's so difficult to be on a diet. I don't know why this is so relevant sometimes, but it's just so difficult. Like, but I know it's good for me because, you know, softball season's coming up and I've got to run around like four different bases after, if I can even hit the ball. And I got to keep up with teenagers. Like the other Sunday night we played basketball and I was like, oh my gosh. And the kids are just running circles around me and I'm like, I can't do this. I can't. So I'm not good at basketball anyways. And, you know, but there's so many, like, benefits to eating healthy in a diet. Like, you don't feel as gross. You start losing some weight. You start feeling better. Like, if you have, like, acid reflux, you're not eating as acidic food. So it's not, like, killing you at night. You're not getting that heartburn. But after, like, a day or two of dieting, like the cravings start showing up. Like you get like the caffeine headaches because you're like, I'm cutting out sodas. I'm cutting out teas. I'm not drinking this caffeine coffee. You people like coffee. I'm not much of a coffee person. you know, you're getting these caffeine headaches and it's just awful. And, you know, you just start craving cheeseburgers and French fries. And next thing you know, it's 11 o'clock at night and you're like, man, I'm so hungry. And you drive to McDonald's because McDonald's is open at 11 o'clock at night. But it's not life-giving at all. In fact, if anything, it's destructive to your life because then the next morning you're waking up and you're like, I don't want to get out of bed because I ate at 11 o'clock at night. And it's 6 in the morning and I got to go to work, but I feel like garbage. And so my life is like downhill because I think I know what's best for me because I feed myself my cravings, what I think is good for me, rather than what we know what's good for us and consuming healthier foods. In fact, in a way, we kind of look at our relationships with other people in the same exact way. We think we know what's best with who we should be interacting with. Like, we choose our people groups, our friends. And you want to surround yourself with good people, people who have the same opinions as you. It's pretty healthy. You have someone to discuss things with and grow with. But if that's all you're surrounding yourself with, you're not helping yourself grow or helping other people grow. But we sit here and we try to choose people based off of our similar views and ideas and the way we look and the way we act and all sorts of different things. Yet we ignore those we don't like. We want to avoid those who are different than us. We want to, you know, say, you know what, you're just not my type of people. You go to your circle. I'm going to stay over here in my circle. And then you don't end up ever talking to anybody except in your comfort zone. And Jesus kind of has something to say about this. Instead of just looking at the people that we like, we also have to think about the people that we may not connect with as well. And so I'm in Luke chapter 6, verses 27 through 36. And it starts out by saying, Jesus starts out by saying, "But to you who are listening, I say, love your enemies. Do good to those who hate you. Bless those who curse you. Pray for those who mistreat you." And so Jesus gets to the point pretty quickly. In our previous passage, the section before this one, Pastor Eric preached on it last week, the Beatitudes and the woes. And so here Jesus is introducing the kingdom to his followers, that it's going to look a whole lot different. Those who are poor and destitute and sick and crippled, they're going to inherit what the world already has, the riches and the health and the power. Those, the woe to them, because they don't have anything else to inherit. And so Jesus moves right on to what the livelihood of the kingdom looks like. And that's how we should be to other people. And immediately he starts to talk about our enemies. And man, sometimes it's already hard enough to love your friends. The other night, I play Fortnite. It's probably not so good. It's a good way for me to communicate with friends who I can't see every day. So I play with some guys that are back in North Carolina and some that are at school at Trevecca. And, you know, we're playing and we land at this one spot and we completely loot it. But I have really bad weapons. And so I'm like, I'm not going to be able to fight people. I'm not going to be able to help you guys out. So I kind of go the opposite direction of my teammates. And they're like, "That's not the route we normally go." And it's like, it doesn't matter. I can't fight. I don't have the power. And so I'm off looting, like, further away from them. And then two of our guys run into a squad of four and end up dying. And they're mad at me now because I let them die. What a good friend I am. But enemies are so much harder to get along with. It seems so much more difficult because I have nothing in common with them. They're so much more different than I am. And typically, if they're my enemy, they're going to be against me. They're not going to want to hear anything that I have to say. They're not going to want to enter into a relationship with me. Or at least that's what I think. Let me tell you a story. When I was a kid, which I'm still kind of a kid, but, you know, more like 6th or 7th grade, went to church, and we would play on the playground a lot just before we would go into youth group, and we found this football on the playground, and we decided, you know what, here's a football, we're a bunch of dudes, we're going to throw football around, because it's what dudes do. So we're throwing this football around and having a good time, probably tackling each other because we're 6th graders, and next thing I know, this kid comes out screaming and it's like, "What are you doing with my football? That's my football. You can't play with my football. That's my football." And so we're all like, "What's going on?" Like, we literally just found this football laying on the playground. Nobody around it. Seemed like nobody cared about it. So we decided to give that football some love. And still wanted his football back. And so sassy self as me as a 6th grader, whole lot more confrontational than I am today, decides to go up to him and say, "Hey man, what's the problem? Like, this football was here. We decided to play with it. I don't see what the problem is." And he came back and was like, "It's my football. I don't want you guys playing with it. It's my football." And so I'm just getting irritated at this point because I'm like, we did absolutely nothing wrong. We just wanted to play with a football that no one else was playing with and play with it. Like, what's the big deal about this? And so I'm getting angry and flustered. And next thing I know, I don't really remember what happened. I kind of black out. And when I come back to, I had hit the kid in the face. Not exactly my proudest moment, if I'm being honest. And so I'm kind of like, "Whoa, I just punched this kid in the face." And the kid's like, "Whoa, you just punched me in the face." And so I just kind of start trotting away, and he starts picking up pine cones and throwing them at me because, I mean, I was a weak little 6th grader, so I didn't do much damage. He was a weak little 6th grader, and there wasn't much damage he could do either except throw pine cones at me. And I'm dancing around these pine cones, dodging them, and my friends are like taunting him, and I'm taunting them back, and it's not a good situation. See, I didn't see the fairness in it because, I mean, it wasn't really fair. We were just playing with a football we found that no one seemed to really care about. And in that moment, he became my enemy. And as a Christian, this isn't the way we're supposed to react to our enemies. Jesus had just said, love your enemies. You know, pray for those who persecute you. Oof. And so I'm not really proud of that moment in my life because I retaliated to the selfishness of my enemy with my own selfishness. And so rather, this is how Jesus tells us to react. He says in verse 29, if someone slaps you on one cheek, turn to them the other. If someone takes your coat, do not withhold your shirt from them. Give to everyone who asks of you. And if anyone takes what belongs to you, do not demand it back. Do to others as you would have them do to you. You know, it just kind of seems weird that if someone takes something from you, it's like you can't even ask for it back. But why does that like matter? As Christians, we're supposed to react in a different way. If someone attacks us, we let them attack us again. You know, if someone takes something from us, we let them have it. In fact, if they take something from us, we give them something else because they need it, right? We want to be treated the same way. If I was in need and I asked you guys, hey, help me, I would expect you guys to help me. And I think you would expect the same because we're in trouble. We're in this together. We live in the same world and we want to see each other succeed. But our culture is kind of different. Our culture is more about if you work hard for something, as long as I work hard and I get the right job and the right amount of money, I can get whatever I want. I don't need anybody's help and I don't certainly need to help anybody else. Because I can afford my expensive TV or game systems, clothes or food or anything else that I want. And we brush off the people who don't have any of it, saying that if only they worked harder, they could have it. As Christians, we have an expectation to not live this way. Rather than hoarding what we have, we're expected to be willing to give what we have away if someone needs something to give, like if someone needs something to be given to them. And then Jesus continues in verse 32, he says, if you love those who love you, what credit is that to you? Even sinners love those who love them. And if you do good to those who are good to you, what credit is that to you? Even sinners do that. And if you lend to those from whom you expect repayment, what credit is that to you? Even sinners lend to sinners expecting to be repaid in full. We just can't be good to those who are good to us. You see, we're expected to do more. In fact, when Christ came into our lives, we have life now. We died to ourselves and we have gained this life that honestly makes us wonder why these things even really matter to us. That makes us no different than the world if we just expect goodness from those who gave us goodness. See, Jesus isn't just saying something here. In fact, he came in and met us where we were at in his life. In fact, he didn't just do what a sinner would do. He didn't lend to people and expect a return on it. In fact, at the end of his life, after he had taught this towards the end of his life, he was falsely accused by the people he was teaching. You know, he stood before a trial that even the person who convicted him said that he was innocent. He was lashed multiple times. He had to carry his own cross all the way up to where he was nailed to it with arms wide open. And he died for the very enemies that put him up there. He died for their sins. And so he sought out the people that needed him most, the poor, the hungry, the sick, the blind, the lame, the orphan, and the widow, those who were so in need of him. He gave everything. He was humiliated for it. Yet he asked for nothing in return for the payment of our debts. All he wanted was for us to do the same. And so he continues in verse 35. He says, "But love your enemies. Do good to them. And lend to them without expecting to get anything back. Then your reward will be great, and you will be the children of the Most High, because he is kind to the ungrateful and wicked. Be merciful, just as your Father is merciful." So now we have the same calling because of what Jesus did. And we're filled with his sacrificial love. In fact, so much like we've accumulated all this stuff. But once we're filled with Christ, it doesn't even matter anymore, because now we know what it really means to have true life. We have died to ourselves. Oh, we don't care what we gain or what we give. We care about the people that are around us, because that is what Jesus evokes in us. And so as Christians, we shouldn't care if someone doesn't line up with our opinions or riches, but that we care that all people should have life, because we have received Christ. And so now our possessions, our money, our jobs, they don't matter as much anymore, because there are people out there who need us, who need to know who Christ is. And so if we're so against our enemies and against the people that we don't know and the people that are so different from us, are we really living? We're not. In fact, we can't even really say that Christ is in us, because if Christ is in us, then we're pushing forward his movement. We're living his life. And so we're called to reach the people that we don't necessarily think we would ever like. That day, I punched the kid in the face. My pastor got a hold of me, and he spoke some true words of wisdom. So whenever my pastor was irritated with us, he did like an eyebrow thing. And it was kind of the scariest thing I've ever experienced in my life. And he said, "Sam," with those eyebrows, "Sam, you claim to be a Christian, yet when something did not go your way, you hit him. Is that what Christ, who gave his life, would have done?" And he let me sit there and think about it. See, I learned a pretty valuable lesson that day, is that no matter who my enemy is or what I think they deserve, they're to be treated with the exact same love that Christ has given me. And the love that Christ has given me went all the way to his own death. Am I willing to die for people I don't even know? Christ's life says yes. And so my life needs to say yes. So I have a bit of a challenge for you all this week. I want you to think about maybe who your enemies are, or who the people you think are outside of your circle, or who you don't speak to on a regular basis. And think of some ways that you can show the life that Christ has given you. Maybe that looks like keeping $5 or $10 in your wallet, so that way you can give it to someone in need who asks for a need. Or maybe it looks like maybe you're having a coat and you see someone freezing and it means giving away your coat. We can buy a new coat. The coat doesn't matter. What matters is building these relationships with other people that don't know Christ. So just as Christ gave up his life for us, he gave for others. And we're supposed to be a witness to that. I went a little quickly today, which is fine. So I want to offer you a blessing today and say, may the God who gives us life and love go with us. and as we are the arms and feet of Christ. May he bless our enemies, and may we recognize those around us who are in need of the same love given to us. Go in peace.